He testified at the first Belmarsh Tribunal at the National Press Club last January. To see the full video of both Belmarsh Tribunals, visit democracynow.org. And that does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prue, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Emily Anderson, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Tune in to Higher Reasoning Reggae every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. Higher Reasoning Reggae is dedicated to bringing international reggae word and sound power to the massive airing early Sunday mornings at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Portland.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life, of your journey. Join us first and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here on KBOO 90.7 FM and available online at kboo.fm. Consuelo is my name, and I will be glad to hear from you and reminisce about your journey. Once Upon a Time, live in the air room here at KBOO 90.7 FM. Share with us your memories, experience, and journey of your life. First and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here at KBOO 90.7 FM.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. Still looking back at what has transpired in the year 2023, a whole lot of things have happened, especially on the national stage, and I wanted to talk to two people who have their finger in the pulse. They are, by definition, activists and organizers, very astute. One of them is Malina Abdullah, who heads up the largest chapter of Black Lives Matter, out of Los Angeles, and has been doing incredible work for the last 5-6 years, holding police accountable. The other one is Jasiri X, who is an activist on the East Coast in Pittsburgh with national and international presence. He heads up an organization called One Hood, and both these individuals are also pretty good journalists. So Melina holds down a radio show on one of the big stations in LA. It's KVLA.
That's
you know, Tavis Smiley's outlet. And Jasiri, in addition to hosting panels and conversations with rap sessions, now has a TV show on Free Speech TV with a crew of people. And so it's good to have you all on. It seems like every day there's a crisis. You know, if I had to describe 2023, it's just a constant array of crises. And I guess over the past 75 days, we've been consumed with what's going on in the Middle East, with Gaza, the massacre, the genocide that's taking place. But there were a lot of other things that are going on. And so you all have been ear to the ground, 10 toes down. And I wanted to see what stood out for you in 2023 as we lead up to some of the issues that I think have culminated with what we're seeing with this massacre and the response to it. Cancel culture, people speaking out, and folks who have positions trying to make laws, make it almost a crime for you to say certain things. All this sort of stuff, I think, kind of underscores where we're at in 2023. So let me start off with you, Melina. What has stood out for you this year?
In Los Angeles, we started 2023 with just a slew of murders of Black people at the hands of police. So Keenan Anderson, who's the relative of one of the Black Lives Matter co-founders, Patrice Cullors, was tased to death in a busy intersection on Venice and Lincoln. And that came just a day after Takar Smith, a Black father, was shot dead in his own apartment in the midst of a mental health crisis. And so we started 2023 with police murder and having to respond to the deaths of our people at the hands of police. And then white supremacy kind of doubling down, having to both resist police violence, but also this is a year of tremendous backlash where white supremacy is unabashed in how it comes for Black people, how it comes for poor people, how it comes for our calls for resources for our community. And I want to leave it on a note that Black Lives Matter turned 10 this year. So July 2023 marked 10 years of Black Lives Matter. And so there is the assault on Black people, but there's also always the resistance. And so 2023 has been really, really heavy. And we also have to be inspired by the will of people to continue to struggle for our own freedom. And of course, when Black freedom comes, the freedom of everybody else comes as well.
Right. You mentioned about the police. And I think in the wake of George Floyd, people have been like, okay, we put this guy in jail, which was also a big story, Derek Coffin getting stabbed 20 times or what have you. Police brutality is over. We got the guy who did it, you know. But there's been a lot of police killings this year all over the country. And that is almost, I wouldn't say been overshadowed, but it's something's like, oh, we don't need to cover that anymore. You know, we don't need to talk about that anymore. And instead, the narrative has shifted to us seeing video after video after video after video, usually the same video of people running into stores and stealing clothes, you know, a handful of clothing, and saying, this is what's wrong with our city. This is why we need more police. That's been kind of, you talked about a backlash. That's been kind of the backlash. And I think it's well orchestrated, very calculated, and well funded.
It's also like crime is not up. Crime is down. Violent crime is dramatically down. Property crime is also down. This is the lowest level of crime that we've seen since 1970. So this is a media made story. And so we need to be very, very clear. And then they're using these property crimes. My mother was really mad at me because I said, I really don't care about Nordstrom profits. If they're going in and stealing bags from Nordstrom's, I don't care about Nordstrom's, right? I don't care about their profits. And my mom was mad that I said that, but I feel that way because what they're using it to do is to justify not just the criminalization of people who are stealing, but they're also using it to justify violence against those people. And so they're using it to also steal public resources. If we look at what happened in our state with Gavin Newsom, then having this special fund of many millions of dollars, I think it was like hundreds of millions of dollars, to go to retail theft. Why are we publicly funding the profits of private corporations? If they want to protect their profit, then they should use their private profit to protect that profit. It shouldn't be public dollars that are used for that. So that is a manufactured story that's used to usher in more police that, as you note, have killed more people this year than they have in the many years past. The killing of Black people at the hands of the police is one of the only areas of crime that has gone up.
Before I bring in Jasiri X, the argument has been made that $70 billion has been stolen on retail theft. And 70, not 7, 70. And I often remind people, you can't have that sort of theft with people just running in to a store and grabbing a handful of clothes and sneakers or what have you. You don't even have that much amount. You don't even have $1 billion worth of damage when people have had full-scale uprisings or riots or whatever. So $70 billion, that ain't Johnny and his friends who ran into a store and stole some clothes. I mean, that's problematic, and you could deal with that if that's really the issue, but that ain't $70 billion. And
Journalist Keith Boykin did a really great story on this, that the vast majority of those thefts are inside jobs.
Yes.
Right? The vast majority are inside jobs. And we also know that it's not just that these retailers are insured for those thefts. So we got to think about all of that. So I really want to uplift all of what you're saying, that these are inside jobs. It's not some teenagers who are running in and stealing an armful of clothes from TJ Maxx.
And it ain't a lot of Black people doing it too,
mm-hmm.
even though that's the videos that they show. Jasiri X, you're in the East Coast.
Yes.
You've been doing weekly shows. In fact, you started off this week in White Supremacy, and now that show's been picked up and it's expanded, yes. And you're in 50 states and on TV. What have you all been covering this year that, you know, trend-wise, that has stood out, you know?
Yeah, I think that that retail piece, y'all kind of stole a little bit of my thunder. I was going to kind of talk about that narrative, right? And it's really...
Wait, so it's happening in Pittsburgh where you're at, too?
Oh, absolutely. Right, this idea... So, for you know, the idea that, like, one of the narratives that they're painting in Pittsburgh is the idea that, like, our downtown is, like, unsafe. And it's really, like, even though, like, we were just named, like, one of the 15 safest downtowns in the country, but if you read the paper, like the local paper, it'd have you believe that there's crime wave, like the cities are so dangerous, but like, you know, you said and Melina said, crime's actually down, right? Violent crime's actually
down. Wait
a second,
hold that thought for a second. That's the same narrative they say about LA, right?
1,000%.
That's right.
San Francisco.
That's what they say. I just got off the phone with the journalists in San Francisco. They say that about San Francisco. They say that about Oakland. I look at the New York Post. They're saying that about New York.
Yes.
They say that about Dallas. They say that about Houston. So every downtown around the United States has the same narrative. You can't go downtown. People are running into stores, stealing stuff. And it's out of control. And let me guess, they're calling for more cops. They need more cops, right?
Absolutely, right. That's the narrative. And it's the one thing that is up, and this is a major thing that we're seeing all around the country, is homelessness. You know, from I think the last account, they said it was 12%. And so like many cities, what we're seeing, you know, in places like Pittsburgh or San Francisco, and of course, L.A., is an increase in homelessness, an increase in a regular American's ability to maintain the amount of money that it takes to have a home. And so we're seeing this homelessness kind of explode, and we've seen it explode here in Pittsburgh. And you know what's happening is it's really like people like not wanting to see it, right? It's people not wanting to look at homeless people. And so in Pittsburgh, one of the shelters was like forced to close because of where it was. It was near one of those retail areas, and the corporations kind of came together, and they were like, oh, we don't want this shelter here, right? You realize homelessness is a problem. You know, we realize that folks need a place to stay, they need services and support, but we don't want to see them. We don't want, you know, the homeless shelter like in our neighborhood. And so that's been a really big part. Anywhere we've traveled, when we travel downtown, we've seen a dramatic increase in homelessness. And so how are we addressing that? That's one of the things that as an organization, we began to address this year with somebody that works with us, our brother Manny, who's been in the front line of that work for us. There's also a similar narrative around immigration. And that's another thing, like the supposedly this border crisis and all of these people are coming into the border, right? And we went from America was a come, right? You're tired, you're poor, you're hungry, right? This is what made America, were folks coming over here, to now this idea that we need to shut America off or shut America down, and that it's these people coming from other countries that are harming us, that are the problem, right? Not the fact that, you know, corporate wealth has increased and CEO wealth has increased by trillions of dollars while, you know, our wages are the same or lower. The issue is now the migrants and the immigrants. And a lot of, unfortunately, sadly, a lot of Black people are buying into this also false narrative that this is the problem, right? Where you see there's like Eric Adams, you know, buying into that BS. And so that's another, to me, like as media creators and folks are in this space, narrative that we have to beat back around immigration. And the last thing I'll say, brother, is I cannot remember us being in a political situation that we are right now, where we're 1 year away from a presidential election and we actually don't even know who's going to be the Democratic or Republican nominee. Where the leading Republican nominee, Donald Trump, has 91 felonies and was just kicked off the ballot in Colorado, although still has a significant 50 to 60 point lead over his nearest opposition. And the Democratic nominee in Joe Biden just looks, you know, weaker and frailer every day. And it seems like whatever popular policy that particularly young people and Black and brown people who propelled Biden to his victory in 2020, it seems like anything that we want that's last on the agenda, that's not being dealt with, and every day is just another misstep that makes us wonder if he is even going to be the Democratic nominee for president. And so I haven't seen a political environment like this in my lifetime.
Real talk, that's the voice of Jasiri X. We also have Malina Abdullah. We're taking a look back at the year 2023. I was going to kind of avoid talking about the situation in Palestine for a minute, because that's a huge story and an obvious one. And we've been addressing that probably all 75 days since it started. But you brought up something when you talked about the increase in homelessness, and you also mentioned the fact that agenda items that were pushed by a significant portion of the population that voted for and got this administration into office, that organized, they just didn't go out and vote, but they organized, and people mm-hmm. like yourselves have been a part of those projects, you know, volunteering their time in battleground states. In Pennsylvania, where you're at, is a battleground, so you got Absolutely. To see that up close and personal. We saw mm-hmm. at the start of this genocide that they were able to come up with not one, not two, not three, not four, not 10, not 20, but $100 billion. It's like, we got $100 billion. We're going to send it to Ukraine and we're going to send it to Israel, right? $100 billion. And we got an increase in homelessness.
Right.
We can't forget student loans. Right. We can't get free Medicare. In Israel, they have free Medicare, you know, Medicare for all. But we can't have that here. I'm bringing
it. Made me think, Davey, it made me think, you know, remember when $100 million was a lot?
Yeah.
Like, not $100 million. $100 billion. Now, mind you, we've already given between $30 to $40 billion to the Ukraine. And one of the issues that people had with that was the fact that it's like, okay, you know, as Black people, you know, New York just passed a law around analyzing reparations. And whenever we ask, like you said, when we say reparations and when we say healthcare for all, and when we say forgiving student debt, it's like, oh, the price tag is too big. Oh, we can't do that. That costs too much money. How much is that going to cost? We don't have that money. But when it comes to war, we got $100 billion that we want to propose. And I think, like, because there's so much more information available to us now from sources like you, right? From individuals like you that come with the facts every day on Hard Knock Radio, people can make more informed decisions and say, nah, we're just not going to,
right?
We're not just going to co-sign this, right? That this is ridiculous, particularly as the price of regular everyday items are becoming so untenable for the average working class person in this country.
Yeah, just look at the price of a car. You know, car is $50,000, $40,000. Melina, I wanted to ask you, Melina Abdullah, I brought this up, and I think the obvious is that, yeah, we have money for war, but we don't have money for the poor. Tupac said that.
Right.
But I want to look at this from a political lens. And what we're seeing is, like, I put you in office. How are you moving in a direction where you support this? Now, we can point and demonize the right wing. We get that. But a lot of this is also coming on the heels of Democrats. You know, people that say, hey, we need to vote for so-and-so. These are folks that have been like, yeah, you know, got to help Ukraine, got to help, you know, Israel. And then when it comes to, you know, student loans and everything else, they're like, well, our hands are tied. We can't do it. You know, Joe Biden is trying his best. But I mean, I'm watching you come up with $100 billion from where? So let's talk a little bit about the political accountability and what that looked like in 2023. You, both of you all have been responsible for legislative change in your cities. You got rid of district attorneys. You put a mayor in office. You know, you put a mayor in office in Pittsburgh. You got one of your people who founded, helped co-found your organization is now on city council. All these sort of things. And we've seen that across the board. I can go to a number of cities where we've seen, quote unquote, our folks get into office. How have you been able to hold them accountable? And are those people that you all have put in, are they the ones co-signing? Or is it another group of people that need to be removed for office because you might have voted for them on a downstream ticket and then they still turned their back to you? I'll start off with you, Melina. Political accountability.
So one, I want to add, I just want to note that you all are talking about $100 billion, but the number is actually $110.5 billion. It's so much money that we can forget the other $10.5 billion because it's so much money, right?
Right.
You know, what could we do? Even if they just gave us the $10.5 billion to address the highest rate of homelessness that this country has ever seen. That's where we are. This is the highest rate of homelessness that this country has ever seen, right? That Tupac line is absolutely right. They got money for war, but can't feed the poor, right? They could feed the poor, they just choose not to. These are, you know, one of my mentors is Dr. Julianne Malveau, who talks about budgets being moral and ethical documents. The reason that we see this is because they are, we are in a country and under a political system where, you know, the first lesson that we learn as political scientists is the number one goal of a politician is to get elected and to get reelected, not to advance a vision, not to be beholden to community, not to do justice, not to do good work, not to be of service, but to get elected and reelected. And so when we think about the two major parties, when we think about what both Republicans and Democrats are doing, when we think about the fact that the majority of Democrats in office won't even say ceasefire in Palestine, as they've killed now upwards of 26,000 people is the latest number in the last 75 days. 26,000 people, half of them children. They can't even say ceasefire, even though 80% of those who are registered Democrats believe in a ceasefire, right? So what is it? What is it that there's two things that get them in office and keep them in office? It's both votes, but also money. So the votes, as we talk about manufactured kind of stories and rhetoric and the role of rhetoric, what the Democrats have done and what they're doing is really capitalizing off of how off the rails the Republicans have gotten. They're capitalizing off of this crazy stuff that Donald Trump has just said, right? About building more walls, about deporting, about poisoning the blood of our country, right? And saying, you don't want him, so your only other choice is Joe Biden. And so they address the question of the vote by saying that, or they think they do, right? But then they also are pandering to an Israeli lobby that funds their campaigns. And, you know, Hill Harper was vocal.
But let's stop there. Mm-hmm. We know that they give money, but they didn't give money to you. They didn't give money to Jasiri. They didn't give money to your operations. And you guys have had some pretty good operations that have resulted, at least local victories. The receipts are there, right? And we know people, you know, that we could have had on this call. We could have got somebody like Biko Baker or Pastor Mike McBride and others who have done some national work that have really led the charge. So how are they making a choice when they look and go, well, this group of people here brought people power to the party, and if it wasn't for your work locally and nationally, they wouldn't be in office. What did AIPAC do for them? Buy them just commercials on radio? What money did they, when they gave them the money, what did that money get them?
It got them loyalty. Like, what did Hill Harper say, that they offered him $20 million to run? They offered him $20 million to run against Rashida Tlaib, right? Mm.
As they try to pit Black and Palestinian against each other.
Right, right. But Black Detroit likes Rashida, right? And so that's not going to work. The people power that you're talking about is the absolute antidote to what they are, right? The people power can work. And the people power has worked. You're pointing to many, many examples. They're afraid of the people power. So they'll continue to dole out more dollars to buy the loyalty of elected officials who again, have the primary goal of getting elected and reelected. I don't care if you're in office, if you're not doing the work of the people. I don't want to elect you and reelect you, Joe Biden, if you're funding genocide.
Forget Joe Biden for a minute. How have you been able to hold the people that you have put in office accountable, both of you? I'll start off with you, Malina, and then go to Jasiri. How have you been making sure that, okay, we got you in office, follow through? Or are your people that you help, like a Karen Bass, is not in office without the help? George Gascon is not the DA without the work that you have done. Have they been accountable with the agendas that you all feel need to happen? Or they've been like, hey, you know, we got this, you know, this money from these lobbyists, we're going to go in another direction?
It's really complicated. So there is some accountability. So we have seen the DA be somewhat accountable, but not completely accountable because of these like false narratives of rising crime, because of a backlash that he's receiving, where the DAs just won't, the assistant DAs just won't do what he says, right? And they can, right? They're civil servants, so he can't fire them. So we are seeing some accountability, not complete accountability, with people like a Karen Bass. What we're seeing is a willingness to be engaged, but not a willingness to be accountable. And so we have to continue to build people power that says, look, your seat is not assured in a re-election if you are not beholden to the people. And so that's constant work on behalf that people have to engage in, and it's heavy work. And so our job, I think, as organizers is reminding folks that we do have power, and the power comes from consistency and having to constantly engage these folks so they're not bought off.
Real talk.
Yeah. Also, I would jump in too, David. You know, we were able to, in 2022, elect the first Black congresswoman in Pennsylvania history in Summer Lee. You know, Summer Lee was one of the first 11 to come out and talk about a ceasefire, and got, you know, really, really under attack. You know, Pittsburgh is unique in that, you know, we were 5 years ago a place of white supremacist violence against the Jewish community. When Robert Bowers went up into a synagogue and killed 9 Jewish worshipers, that happened 5 years ago in October. And so Summer Lee, you know, to her own political peril, was willing to come out and say and stand for the moral issue and what's morally right. You know, like Melina said, you know, AIPAC came out, and basically she's one of the individuals that are targeted. You know, when Summer Lee ran in 2022, AIPAC put $3 million against her in the primary, and we were able to win by 200 votes. Now AIPAC is saying they want $100 million against 5 Black and brown candidates, right? And so again,
all because it's like, they call for a ceasefire.
One of the reasons, right? But this is what's interesting. Like, they don't come out and say that. Like, when AIPAC came at Summer Lee in 2022, they didn't say it was because of how they felt her stance on Israel was. They tried to say she wasn't a real Democrat. They tried to say she was aligned with Trump, right? So they're not even being honest about their own beliefs and benefits. So I think part of how we hold people accountable is, one, make sure that we're constantly building on the people power that we have and making sure folks go to the polls. But we also have to raise money for these folks in office, right? If AIPAC is saying that they're going to put $100 million, well, collectively, we have $100 million, David. We know this, right? Now, we can't, you know, there might be some of us that can write a check for $100 million, but if we put our 5s, 10s, 20s, and 50s together, we can collectively begin to raise money. So one of the things that we've been saying to the organizers and activists here, as folks are going out and rallying, we also have to make sure, like, we like to sign up for monthly, if you can afford 50 a month or 20 a month or 100 a month, to put it in that those small numbers, if we all collectively do it, can add up. We know they're coming with a flood of money against these candidates. And so if we can do that, if we can bring people and the resource to the table, then the candidate doesn't have to make these compromises that they feel they have to make because they need resources and money to win elections. This is the last thing I'll say, David, is, you know, we elected a Black mayor in 2021, the first Black mayor in the history of Pittsburgh, Mayor Ed Gainey, right? And so, but he only has 4 years, right, to effectively deal with the problems and turn these ships around. You need 10, 15 years, so you only got 4 years. And so it's like, if we don't effectively organize to say, we got you, stay moral, stay centered, stay with what you believe, then they'll start to make decisions because they want another 4 years to fulfill the promises that they might have made. And so we have to also, like, not only hold these politicians accountable, but we have to go to war with these forces that are there who don't have the best interests in our community. This is the deep part about AIPAC, bro. They don't even live here. Like, so you're having people that don't live in Western Pennsylvania that are not affected by any decisions that come about Western Pennsylvania, but they can put millions and millions of dollars into this campaign. So there's another piece around campaign finance reform and all of the other stuff that we have to do as organizers to effectively push back on these issues.
That's the voice of Jasiri X. We also have Malene Abdullah looking back in the year 2023. One of the big stories that has gone on is the fact that we've seen a continuation of erasing or restricting the types of conversations we can have around history. Florida, once again, wants to double down on a law to say that, you know, you can't make people feel uncomfortable in the classroom by talking about systemic racism. Texas has doubled down on a similar type of policy. And that is pretty much in all 30, you know, almost every southern state. Arkansas was the latest one.
Oklahoma,
you can't even talk about the Tulsa race riots. And so that is was one aspect. Of course, we've seen simultaneously the restrictions around abortion and reproductive justice. And simultaneously, we've seen, you know, clamp down on quote unquote immigration, even though most of those states don't have, they're not on a border. So with that being said, these laws have been passed state by state on local levels. They have a national impact. One, your thoughts on that, and two, what do you think we should be doing in 2024 to combat that type of state house by state house by state house legislation that has been very, very hostile? I think part of the hostility is that they don't want the reverse migration to continue. People saying, California's cool, it's expensive, let me move to Texas, you know, which several million people have done, only to be met with these restrictive laws. Let me move to Florida, only to be met with these restrictive laws. So if you all can put on your national hats, do we have enough people in Florida, you know, from the organizing that you all do, to really flip the switch? Do we have enough people in Texas to flip the switch? Is there another tactic that we need to have?
So if I can touch on it, because we actually flipped the script in Pennsylvania, and we took the state house by one vote in Pennsylvania. We have a black woman, Joanna McClinton, who is the head of the state house, a black woman from Philadelphia, right? And we have a Democratic governor in Josh Shapiro, right? And so it's the way we're taught about voting is wrong, Dave. It's actually backwards, right? We engage people around voting around a presidential campaign. And unfortunately, that campaign, your vote matters the least, right? Your vote actually matters the most at a local level. We'll dismiss somebody in the school board. In Pittsburgh, Davey, our school board budget is larger than our city budget. So a school board member, yes. So a school board member actually has access to more resources than a city councilman. But we'll dismiss, oh, they're just a school board. But when you look at these Moms of Liberty and these white supremacist groups, they started to target school boards, right? They started to target these places. And so we have to start locally is where your vote matters the most. And the school board person, you can call. You can call the school. You can go see them in the community, right?
You can see them at the grocery store.
Absolutely. So we started when we started Womanhood Power, you know, RC4 organization, we started on local races. We started to target particular, we targeted black school board members who voted to put more cops in our schools. Oh, they got to go. And so we started to get people on our school board that believed in resources and love on our community and youth, right? Like you mentioned, Kahari Mosley, our civic engagement director, one of our founders of Womanhood Power, is now my city councilman. I live in a place in East Liberty in Pittsburgh. I tell people I live in a formerly black neighborhood. My neighborhood becoming gentrified, but now my brother and friend is going to be my city councilman. He gets sworn in January, right? Our county executive is a progressive woman, the first woman county executive that we have. Again, we had to explain to people that the county executive, their budget is 10 times that of a mayor. yeah, the mayor has the name and the thing, but this county executive has a $1 billion budget. This is how we had to explain it to people why that's important. And now her and the mayor can work together on issues like homelessness. And so it's just that we have to start thinking like locally is where those, as you can kind of get into the weeds. And if you look at when the Republicans started to take this, these state houses, that's what they did. They started focusing on school boards and local races. We can do the same thing. A lot of these communities, we have more of the people in the community as well. That's what we got to start focusing on. And some of these people that we identify as activists and organizers, thankfully, Kahari was right there. As somebody that you know has been in politics for the last 15 years, and now look at what happened. The same thing happened, and ironically, they're both District 9 in Harlem, New York City.
That's right?
With my brother Yousef Salam now on city council, and so and he went up against
one of the Central Park Five.
Yes, and what we say exonerated
five, now. Yeah,
and he whooped the establishment because of who he is. And his story, we can do this in every city, bro. And we can start taking these state houses because, like you said, the state, remember, it was the state Supreme Court in Colorado that kicked Trump off the ballot, right? And it was wild because they were conservatives and Republicans. But so decisions can be made on a state level. We have to look at local politics as even more important than who's going to sit in that White House in 2024.
Real talk. Melina, what would you add to this? You know, what's your thoughts on just the way that these restrictive laws have been showing up nationwide and the network of people that you work with? Are they in a position to battle back?
Well, I think I agree with everything Jasiri said. And I also want to uplift that as we talk about these really repressive laws and policies that are passing locally and through state governments, we have to remember that they're not actually independent, right? That there's still an American Legislative Exchange Council, which is building towards this real repressive regime and saying one of the strategies is to move things through states and local governments instead of federally as a first step. And so this is not like, oh, Colorado decides or some local government decides. This is, there's a real conspiracy. There are real people in a room conspiring against people of color, conspiring against working class people, conspiring against poor people. And this is where I really appreciate what you shared, Brother Jasiri. We have to be willing to take note and say, you know, we can do the same thing in reverse, right?
Yep.
We can talk about how do we pass liberated ethnic studies in our schools. They want to have repressive laws in our schools. They want to have restrictions in our schools. They want to ban AP African American studies in our schools. Well, we can organize ourselves and make it so, like in the state of California, we make ethnic studies a requirement as a counter to Florida. And then once we do it in California, we can make sure that other states also follow suit. And so I think we also have to think about how to build power. Absolutely building power locally is something that can happen. It's how we were able to completely remove police from schools in LAUSD is by, you know, getting folks elected to the board who would listen to the voices of our people, listen to the voices of our students and say, cops on campus is harmful. We want that money specifically to nurture Black students in LAUSD. It's how we got $130 million investment every year in the Black Student Achievement Plan is by really making sure that we focus not just, like you said, on the big national elections, but looking at local elections as well.
You said something about diverting money, and I want to come back to the fact that they're able to find $100 billion, so why are we even pitted against any of these institutions? I mean, we can, you know, philosophically have or politically have differences with them, but it's often been couched, well, if we give you $10, Melina, we got to, you know, fire 15 cops and that's going to make us less safe. And I'm like, well, wait a second. You just had $100 billion. Melina's asking for $10 and some change. why can't you just do that and fund everything that needs to? So I guess the question becomes, where's this money at? And I guess to your point, just so you're saying, well, the money ain't with the mayor, but it is on the county supervisor seat. So we might need to look at that race or
and,
the money.
And also, yeah. And this is how we started to talk about these races. We said, okay, why should you be interested in the county executive? They have a $1 billion budget. Their budget's $1 billion. And they decide where that money goes and to whom, right? This is why you should be worried about the district attorney, because their budget is $500 million, and they decide what lawyers work in different places. So we really started to talk about it in those terms to make it realer for folks, in terms of like, particularly folks who are like, oh, well, voting doesn't really matter, or, you know, I don't want to go out there and vote. It's like, what is understanding now, is voting going to lead to our liberation? No. But at the same time, if we can decide who sits on these boards and these places that decide where these resources goes, and that's, I mean, think about it. We have we talk about a story of 2023 that flew under the radar. We got a Supreme Court justice who went to these Republicans and said, I'm not making enough money. I'm going to retire from the Supreme Court unless I get some more money. And billionaires stepped up. That story just came out the other day.
About
Clarence Thomas. And billionaires came up and started lavishing him with gifts, bought his mom's house, put his, you know, a child friend through private school, taking him on all these trips, right? And this is how, you know, that works now, right? And so now he's voting for all of these individuals that gave him this money. And this is why, this is often why people don't engage in organizing a politics, because we see the corruption, we see the grift, and we see somebody can just come in with a bunch of money and change the whole dynamic of it. And if we just let Clarence Thomas sit there and collect these checks and not do anything about, we haven't even begun a process to remove this man from the Supreme Court, then the whole system seems corrupt, and that is a part of it. So like you said, there also has to be national organizing around how do we have real campaign finance reform? How do we really have real people power? Because unfortunately, we don't have that right now. And so the money is, unfortunately, the people with money are deciding and paying politicians to make laws that benefit them. And that's why we've seen CEO and corporate, you know, finances through the roof. Right. And that at minimum wage still at $7.25, 20 years later, when you can't even go $7.25 and buy nothing, right?
Can't even get across the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, not even close to a livable wage.
Let me ask you this. One of the stories that has happened is that young people are disengaging from the Democratic Party. We're hearing that. Two, and I don't know how true it is. I would say, I'm going to qualify that in saying I'm seeing amplified voices. But the argument has been made that a lot of Black men, in particular, there's also a number of sisters, are very willing to go along with authoritarianism, Trumpism, MAGAism. And, you know, and it seems like a day doesn't go by that I don't see those faces on outlets. Now, again, I want to qualify this and say, just being in the media, like, well, if I want to get some eyes and ears, let me find this person that is, you know, saying that he loves Trump and he agrees with his position that immigrants are vermin. And he's a Black guy too. Let me put him on my radio show and everybody's going to listen because it's controversial. But in your work, I know that you are coming across people that's like, well, sister, you know, we need to move in this direction. Just like I've run into people that were saying, man, what's happening in Palestine is a good thing. You know, they have some crazy rhetoric around that. So how are you dealing with that? And how are you seeing, is there conservatism, the desire to have authoritarianism, is that something that you're seeing on your watching in your circles, or is that manufactured by this machine?
I, I think disillusionment with the Democratic Party, disillusionment with especially those who are running for national office, doesn't translate to conservatism, right? I think that people are saying that, you know, they want to repeat that rhetoric that the only two choices you have are Biden or Trump. And every time Trump gets on TV and says something that is really, really disturbing and evil, they say, this is why you have to vote for Biden. The last thing that he said this week, you know, you saw the Democratic Party saying, this is why we have to reelect Biden. No, we don't. And in places like, we live in California. So, you know, I'm not going to say what Jasiri might need to do in Pennsylvania, but in California, we already know that given the existing system, this state is going to go Democrat anyway. So I think what Black people are looking for, what most of us who are, I'm disillusioned with the Democratic Party, and I'm going to say it, some folks won't like that I'm going to say it, I am not voting for Joe Biden. I can't vote for Joe Biden. You know, the lesser of two evils pitch that they give us still makes me vote for evil. So I'm going to vote for my vision. And I am voting for Cornel West this year, right? Or next year. We have the luxury of doing it in California because, you know, we don't run the risk of California going to Trump. But I think that's what people are looking for. As I talk to my 20-year-old child, you know,
forget Biden for a minute.
Uh-huh.
But let's complicate it. What about somebody who you might not really feel for, you know, a supervisor or sheriff or, you know, some of these other seats where things can really, you know, be messed up? I get it. In California, it's going to be 4.5 million votes going in a blue column versus a red. So we can afford to have that conversation out. And I want to get Jasiri's point of view, because you're in a battleground state where races are decided by 2 and 3 votes, as you pointed out. So there's a whole different understanding that we have to have. But here, the disillusionment has allowed certain people to get into city council, has allowed certain people to sit in the position of sheriff, has allowed certain people to sit in some of these other local municipalities where power can be yielded. And do we still have to have a strategy, you know, or is that something that this conservatism that I'm talking about, is that showing up? No, this is to Melina, then I'll come to you.
Okay, my fault.
This conservatism that I'm talking about, Melina, that they keep saying is existing in our community, is that something that we need to be concerned about on that local level?
I'm not seeing a lot of conservatism. I know, again, that's what I want to emphasize, is that disillusionment with those who are in office doesn't translate to conservatism for me.
Okay.
I think that it does translate. I think disillusionment can translate into opting out of the electoral process. And I think that the goal that we have to have is being able to vote your vision, not just vote the choices that are put before you.
Appreciate that. Jasiri, you're in a battleground state, so how does that look? You know,
well, so
with this conservatism that we keep hearing about.
Well, I think what you're seeing it like on a cultural level. So like this is one of the things that the right wings are good at, taking a cultural issue and making it what they call a wedge issue, right? So one of the issues is like, oh, you might have somebody that's, you know, a transgendered woman playing woman sports. And they'll take that, and then you'll be in a barbershop and have, man, you know, back in our day, men played men and women played, you know, as if you ever cared about a women's sporting event, as if you ever watched, cared about it, looked at it, you know what I'm saying? But these are issues that can become these wedges. COVID-19 was one of them. And wearing a mask or not wearing a mask became one of the, or getting the vaccine and not getting the vaccine. So it became one of these cultural issues. And this is part of how you can kind of divide like organizations and groups. So like what we've been doing, and we're in a battleground state, right? So we organize based on issues, not people. Hmm. We don't organize based on a person, right? You know what I'm saying? And we definitely, just like you said, I can't organize based on Joe Biden and the decision he's making right now. We don't even know if he's going to be the candidate. But what I can organize is around issues, right? Around like, how do we, you know, prevent violence in our community? Around how do we make sure homeless folks in our community have access to resources, particularly on the East Coast when it's cold right now, right? Are we making sure folks have boots and coats and the right amount of food, right? How are we making sure, you know, those individuals that came in, that come into our community as immigrants are treated equally, right? Remember, one of the reason why Robert Bowers as a white supremacist targeted the Tree of Life Synagogue was because this synagogue was helping immigrant communities, giving them resources and making sure that they were assimilated properly into the Pittsburgh community. That's why they were targeted, because of their work with the migrant community. And so those are the issues that we have to organize. So let's and the main issue we organize around is power, building political power as a group. That as a group, this is why we should have political power, so we can hold folks accountable, so we can put folks in office that care about us, that love us, that are from us, right? And so that's how we have to organize, because people are always, you know, politicians are going to politic, you know what I mean, in a lot of ways. And so this is why we don't do, we're not wrapping ourselves in Biden flags or Biden shirts or right. Trump flags or Trump shirts, right? We're wrapping ourselves in, what are the issues? What are the things that as a community we need? Where do we need these resources and money to go to? And how do we make sure that our young people are invested in at the level that they should be? That's what we focus on, issues.
Real talk. Want to thank Melina and Jasiri. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio. East, West, North, South, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor cops. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor cops. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
To meet a friend of ours who goes by the name of Killer Joe. Picture a so-called hippie or hip cat standing on a corner in a neatly pressed, double-breasted, form-fitting pinstripe suit, a pair of pointed-toed shoes with bold white stitches around the soles, a black shirt, long white tie, a black pencil mustache, and of course, a very wide-brimmed black felt hat. Killer Joe always has a pocket full of loot, but only the kind that jingles. You see, he likes to play the horses. He is most certainly a ladies' man. As a matter of fact, he is always willing to accept cash contributions from them for any cause, namely his own. The most important thing about Killer Joe that you have to know is that he's very much against manual labor. Killer Joe.
Thank you. listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting right with it.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to